treasured these moments.
It really was a great together moment, you know, us moment. Yeah. It's us time.
And as predicted, intimate.
Yes, it was very intimate.
It was.
Meaningful. Revealing.
Yes. Particularly intimate because everyone here at PC Gamer, we're only wearing our boxers.
Welcome to episode 175 of the PC Gamer podcast for May 14th, 2009. This is your host, Logan Decker, and I apologize that we were unable to record a podcast last week, but believe me, it was worth it, because instead of recording last Thursday, PC Gamer was getting the world's very first look at offices in and you can read all about it in our August 2009 issue. So, joining me today at PCG HQ, Associate Editor Evan Lotti.
I like to point out that just like Asus's slogan, I am both rock solid and heart touching.
Intern Josh Augustine.
Sick, but still here because I love you guys that much.
What a hero! He is sniffling a lot, which is interesting. And podcast producer Andy Bauman.
I'm here, but since we're actually doing the podcast this week, I can eat, so I'm eating a sandwich.
Whoa.
Without the podcast, I go starving.
Have we kept you from eating? I'm sorry.
Must have been a rough 2 weeks.
I had no idea.
When you guys cancel, it affects the economy or something of my belly.
We did get quite the cover story, and I think everybody will agree that it was very much worth it.
OMG.
O-M-double-G.
O-double-G.
Yeah, yes. Yeah. So, very soon, you shall all know this wonderful piece of news. But until then, let's talk about some other news. As when we were away last week, the terrible news about 3D Realms came out. But since then, there has been almost like a mini flood of gameplay footage and shots of the game, and I have to say I'm pretty blown away by what I'm seeing. You know, it's just especially after seeing those crummy videos that came out last year, and you're like, oh come on, what is this, you know? And you just get lightning quick flashes of video, but this was the real deal, was it not?
It really seemed like it. I mean, a character firing guns in the first person, I mean, it doesn't seem like that would be scripted. A lot of people have been saying, well, all this animation stuff and the sequences are all scripted, but if you've seen the gameplay footage itself, it shows some pretty cool like deformation on the pigs that you're shooting your shotgun at, and there's a boss character that you're bringing down. He's fighting in a giant football field, which if you played Duke 3D, that's a familiar environment, so it looked great. I mean, I'm really disappointed. That's my first feeling for it. But it seemed like there's a lot of content out there, and I don't know if it's even a good idea for another developer to pick that up. The way I understand it, that like transferring code that way doesn't really work smoothly in a lot of ways. But
that's I can totally relate to all the skepticism out there. But you know, it looked pretty good. It looked pretty real. It looked pretty together. And it would just be terrible not to see something done with all that great work. But it does happen, you know. Games have been canceled right up to their finish line. And, you know, it's just life. It's just, you know, we've all been waiting for this for so very long. But, yeah, if you want to see the gameplay footage, it's floating all over the internet, as well as many, many screenshots. And, again, I relate to the skepticism. But, you know, for all these years, they had to be working on something.
I would hope so. I mean, I kind of get frustrated when people just make that joke about Duke Nukem Forever, like, oh, it's never going to come out, it's vaporware. But I think at the heart of it, like, for me, when was the last time we really saw a funny shooter? Like, that's the thing I keep bringing up. We saw, I mean, would it be No One Lives Forever 2 in, like, 2004 or 5?
That was a long time ago.
Yeah. And I just really, I want to see Duke. I want to see that character because it's such an opportunity to make jokes and have novelties and be sarcastic in a shooter, and I miss that kind of game.
And at the same time, you know, intense and
yeah.
And kind of gory, rough, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Good mechanics, yeah. So,
but you know, not that I wouldn't mind No One Seeing Another, No One Lives Forever. Jeez. But they kind of like, I don't know, they made a sort of kind of sequel with Contract Jack, and that was just miserable. So after that, I was like, let's not let that happen again.
It's going to be interesting to see what Monolith does next. I want to say Fear will be another couple years if they, I mean, I'm not going to spoil the ending, but it does sort of hint in Fear 2 that there will be a sequel or some recurrence of the franchise, whether they'll go back to that sort of expansion packy from a different developer stuff they did with like Fear Files and I forget the name of the other one. I'm not sure, but they do have Shogo as well that they might come back to, the mech franchise. There's a big void for that, as we know.
And you were right about the elementary school level in Fear 2. Oh my God. That's terrifying. That was freaky.
It's wonderfully authentic. I mean, even if, I mean, there aren't necessarily, there's just so much traces that kids were actually here, you know, like the colored cubby holes and things like that. All the very custom art of like crayon drawings and fundraisers and book drives and things like that on the wall. It kind of took me back to my own elementary school. Not that it was that scary. I don't want to put it that way. it was just so authentic. You can tell they almost definitely did real research, went to a bunch of different schools and really took a hard look at what this looks like. And it brings the game to life. It's the best part of the game by far, in the middle.
Yeah. When I finished that, I'm like, I just got my money's worth right there. You know, it was like, it was all the scariest levels of games you've ever played, you know, from Vampire the Masquerade, the ghost level, you know, and just brought all these elements together. And it was really frightening. They did a terrific job on that.
Do you remember that story where the kid made a mod of his school and got in like a lot of trouble for it?
Yeah, I can see why you'd get in a lot of trouble for that.
Yeah, but then the developer can make a really striking resemblance to some school, maybe. Like, what if it is exactly like a school?
Well, because people are terrified that kids are going to rise up and shoot everybody.
Oh, okay. You know?
Yeah. I mean, actually, I remember when we were back at the old office. Future used to be just, our old office was like about a mile, maybe even less than a half mile from where we are now. And it was cool because it had a giant atrium in the center, and it was a very open sort of layout, and all the offices were arranged around the atrium. And they had sort of cubicle mazes running all through the building. So it was a natural sort of, it looked like a deathmatch arena.
Yeah, cool.
And, you know, everybody wanted to model it, you know, for a mod, but it just, you just don't make a mod of the workplace for a shoot. You know? You just don't do that. It's just bad form. So that never happened, sadly. You know, there's no reason not to. Like I said, it's just kind of bad form. If somebody else models it, then hey, fine, you know. But it sends the wrong message.
But if you do it in Duke Nukem, though, like Evan was saying, we don't have a funny first-person shooter, it'd be okay. Right?
I'd be uncomfortable sitting next to the person for a while.
But not,
you know,
as, but maybe
I would
not
definitely
quite
have
as
one
bad.
Hand on my holster, you know.
Yeah.
And on my little Nerf gun, hoping I could get him with one of the Nerf suction cups right on his eyeglasses and then run, you know, before he tagged me.
Although it would be great for like communication for a deathmatch. You'd be like, "I'm right by Greg's desk," and then everyone instantly knows where you are.
Oh yeah, nice. Yeah, I could see that. You know, I'm in facilities. Ah, third floor coffee maker. Yeah, I can see that. Well, very bad news about Duke Nukem Forever. We'll keep you abreast of any announcements we hear. Maybe somebody's going to swoop in at the last minute and grab all that nice code up. We have good news in that Thief 4 was officially announced, and so we find one fine franchise being resurrected. The whole Thief series had so many great moments, you know, that I'm very much looking forward to seeing sort of how they revive that kind of feel, the wonderful atmospheric mechanical sort of feel of the entire world that they built.
It's definitely going to be interesting. I mean, again, it's Eidos Montreal, same studio that's reviving Deus Ex 3, which we're expecting before Thief 4, just based on the amount of assets and the information we have right now. But again, it'll be interesting. I mean, there is some indication, like with integrating cover system and some other mechanics they're doing with Deus Ex 3, that it's going to be a little more multi-platform friendly. I mean, I don't want to judge it in advance, but it will be interesting to see if they take a similar approach with Thief 4, if it'll be really true to its roots, or if it'll kind of go in a different direction, maybe take some of the Assassin's Creed stuff that's mm-hmm. readily available to them. We'll see. I'd say it's at least 2010, though. I mean, late 2010.
You know, that'll be here before we know it. It's terrifying, yeah. I mean, we are almost halfway through 2009, and it was just New Year's Day, like 2 days ago. This is very unsettling.
It's hard to think that BioShock came out almost 2 years ago. A year and a half, but yeah.
Hey, Josh, did you play any of the Thief series?
I can't say that I have.
And, I was just dated. Oh, that's terrifying. Although, you know, I do have less patience now for stealth games. I don't think I like them as much today as I used to, you know, 5, 6, 7 years ago. But again, you know, they could make it, like you said, a little more like Assassin's Creed, more running, jumping, you know, free running type stuff. But we shall see. On the other hand, Josh, you do play a lot of MMOs.
That I do.
And what do you think about the new MMO coming up from Blizzard?
Well, I have to say, we did have this kind of debate a few weeks ago about what we thought it was going to be, and I definitely thought that new IP was the way to go. I'm extremely excited about that.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, there's really nothing more released about it, but
yeah.
I mean, a new IP is great. Blizzard just comes up with great universes. They really do. I mean, a lot of people, you know, say World of Warcraft, stolen from Warhammer and stuff like that. But the whole storyline with Thrall and the orcs, I mean, that is entirely Blizzard, and it's really well done. So I'm really excited to see what they come up with.
If it was you, what would you tell them to build? Like hard sci-fi, more fantasy-oriented princesses with big, you know, billowy skirts?
Definitely billowy skirts. I don't know. I'd have to go sci-fi, but more kind of grungy. The trend seems to be moving towards post-apocalyptic. So I'm going to stick with what I said last time, steampunk sci-fi. That's what I'm going
for. Oh, yeah. I could live with that.
Yeah, it seems like a pretty good kind of a hybrid. I like it.
And out next week, a Team Fortress 2 sniper update. New items, new maps. Can you tell us a little bit about that, Evan?
Absolutely. So it's coming maybe a little bit quicker than we expected, the sniper update. We're still on day 2 of what's being announced. So far, they've announced that the sniper is going to get a bow and arrow, which is essentially capable of... It replaces his primary weapon, the sniper rifle, but can also pin players to walls, which is kind of interesting and potentially very fun bit when you combine it with the ragdolling and whatnot. And it says it's capable of firing about one shot per second, so that's much faster than his current sniper rifle and conceivably a little bit weaker. We're also kind of assuming there's an arc mechanic attached to that for shooting at range, and it's a little bit shorter range. And most interesting yesterday, they announced, this has already been, people have already created this type of map in the community, in the TF2 mapping community, but there's going to be a payload race map, which is basically if you played Badwater, or if you played Gold Rush, you have to push this giant cart that has a bomb on it to the end of the map. One team is attacking, the other is defending. But in this case, there's going to be two bombs, and either team is trying to push theirs up and trying to prevent the other team from pushing theirs. So it's kind of an interesting take on that, and I'm really looking forward to it, actually, the kind of having to juggle how much are we supposed to attack, how much are we supposed to defend, and trying to do those things concurrently. It should be really crazy and definitely a nice new mode for players to play with.
So to clarify on the Huntsman, the bow for the sniper, because I saw you have to like charge it up a certain amount to get a full shot. Can you do quick short shots if you want to, or was that just a fancy way of kind of saying how long the cooldown is?
I want to say there's probably some animation delay involved with like bringing his arm back to a quiver and bringing an arrow forward. And that probably, I mean, you probably can't fire that fast. I'm not sure. I've been trying to predict what the other unlockables will be. I want to say a boomerang would fit in well. sort of similar to the way the Scout Sandman works, where you can throw it and maybe it'll stun. I don't know. It would just be a new mechanic for him. I'm trying to think of what's Australian themed or a ranged weapon that would work for him. But
yeah, I was thinking before the arrow thing came in, I was thinking like a trap, just something to kind of hold someone in place for like 2 seconds so they could throw it down normally where they're sniping. And but I mean, with the arrows kind of pinning them against the wall, it kind of has that mechanic.
I mean, if you go on what they did with the Scout release, where they basically only gave the Scout one damage dealing item. I mean, the Sandman was the stun and the energy drink gave him the opportunity to get past sentries and other things. So if the arrow happens to only be the only damage dealing item, I would expect two more sort of accessories or utility items to complement that, if that's what the direction they're going in.
I really do like the idea of pinning people to the wall, though, even for a short period of time. And then setting them on fire, blade style.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, if you get a couple spy bodies pinned against the wall, it's kind of a warning to other spies trying to get close.
Nice. That's the kind of sinister thinking that'll get you promoted around here, son. Hey, you know, okay, I was thinking the other day, I was going through some old games. I was looking for one in particular to do some screenshots, looking at discs. Remember those things? They were shiny on one side.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I found a couple discs of this old shooter called Chaser. And I thought, oh, look at this, man, because I really, really enjoyed that game. And I reinstalled it and I played it for a little while. And the great thing about Chaser was, well, there was really nothing great about it. Which is funny. It was totally average. The graphics were average. The AI was average. All the every person populating every level kind of looked suspiciously like everybody else. You know, there were ninjas and they all looked the same. How convenient, you know, because they all have the outfits on. And yet it was so much fun. It was just well-balanced, good, old-fashioned shooting fun. But it never kind of rose above just being a good shooter. But still, that was enough. I thought it was a great game. It was a great time, but not a great game. And I was wondering, are there any other games out there that are like that? It's something I wouldn't score particularly high. It doesn't stand out, but and it doesn't even try to be much beyond, you know, kind of a nuts and bolts shooter. And yet, it shows you a really good time. Can you think of other games that wouldn't score particularly well, but are still fantastic games for people who love the genre?
Oh man,
that's tough.
My initial reaction is any flash game, like online, that's just like a time waster because they're incredibly dumb and boring. Mm-hmm. But like they're so addicting, and it's like, oh, you have to try and, you know, get the perfect angle to throw the penguin as far as possible.
Yeah,
it's like, man, that's a terrible game, but I sit there and play it for hours because I just love it.
Yeah, penguin shooters.
I mean, Titan Quest. For me, is a little bit of an example of that. We're actually trying to get a group together among us, me and Josh and Andy Salisbury, to start replaying it. I know there was a pretty strong cult following for it, but it was definitely past, you know, in 2006, that prime day when dungeon crawlers were still relevant and really interesting. But it's still an excellent experience for something that's, you know, you have that sense of accumulation. Obviously, it's a new setting. It's not traditional fantasy. It's more mythology. Greek mythology, and again, it's that pace of just going through dungeons, taking your time with a few friends. It's nice to come back to in the same way that you mentioned.
Yeah.
I have trouble thinking of a shooter, but I bring this game up sometimes, but Mech Commander is one of my favorite strategy games of all time. And it has that same like isometric perspective, but it's more of a tactical strategy game in that you're commanding a handful of mechs and you're salvaging the parts of mechs that you destroy in the campaign and bringing them back to HQ and re-equipping and buying new stuff and upgrading your pilots. And that was a fantastic experience that a lot of people looked over, I think.
Another one for me was the old RTS, Star Wars Galactic Battlegrounds.
Oh.
Because it was so obviously just like as a mod for Age of Empires 2, basically, released as a game just with new textures.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I love Star Wars, and having a whole army of like Wookiees with bowcasters just going up against like a clone trooper army was just so it's so novel for the time. I love the setting, but it's just a terrible game. I mean, the gameplay wasn't well done. All they did was change like the arrow model to laser bolts, and that was about it.
It's like a find and replace is what they
go ahead, for a couple of different genres. I would say Rainbow Six Vegas 2 kind of fits the shooter genre for me, as far as a game that didn't really, you know, it didn't change much from the first one.
Like, you're exactly what you mean.
Like,
yeah.
Just put some slot machines that we already modeled over here and like some other ones over here, but it's still way fun.
I mean, Terroristan is one of the best modes in a shooter ever, as far as I'm concerned.
Just because you hate terrorists, right?
Of course, but I mean, it's all about, I mean, basically it uses the multiplayer maps. You and up to three other players kind of hop in these multiplayer maps, and you set the difficulty, so there's up to 30 or 50 terrorists kind of randomly placed about the map. And it's funny, like, I love games in which it works this way, where something undesirable or not quite perfect creates a better experience, and that's, I mean, the AI that Ubisoft programmed for these terrorists is fucking unpredictable and bizarre, in that they'll walk backwards at you and shoot their shotgun over their shoulder while they're walking backwards at you, not looking at you.
What? I've never seen that.
Oh, yeah. And, like, in one shot. I mean, they just do ridiculous things.
Show off. They're,
I do that.
And they're totally unpredictable, but, like, you're forced to deconstruct these really challenging, especially in realistic difficulty, you're forced to deconstruct these really tough situations together, and it's really pretty tense a lot of the times in certain maps, and it's great. If you're getting our July issue now, you know that Red Orchestra 2 has been announced by Tripwire. They're going to integrate that also into their game in a World War II setting, so that's exciting.
Wow, cool. Hunt the Nazis or something like that?
Well
hunt the SS. Hunt.
I think, you know, it's too bad that it was associated with just this huge, you know, sort of pop culture sensation, because I thought the Matrix game wasn't all that bad.
Oh, yeah.
It's just people came to it, you know, expecting, you know, this mind-blowing experience. It was not a mind-blowing experience. It didn't work well on a lot of systems. It was quite choppy and slow at the time, but it was a really good game. It wasn't a great game, but it was really fun. And it had shared the same look. It had that kind of green tinting to it, that kind of atmosphere. I thought it was really well done. It was very enjoyable. It just wasn't, you know, quite the experience of the movie, and it did get kind of hokey at times. But I thought, you know, I think if you just forget that it was associated with the movie, it's a decent game. But that is, I did not say did online.
Of course.
Good Lord, what the... Yeah.
Oh. But still, I mean, it's really important to have this conversation, I think, because there are a fair amount of games that just totally get lost in the shuffle as big communities come up and your friends are playing a certain game, so you feel like you have to get invested in that community. I mean, there's a lot of stuff you can come back to, and as much as we publish reviews out of here, obviously we don't advocate just listening to reviews. I mean, it's a subjective experience. You should value what you value and pursue that. One more actually came to mind for me. It was more of a console lead title, but it came out of a Free Radical Design. Mm-hmm. If anybody's heard of them, they made Time Splitters. That was also only on consoles. It's a really, again, funny shooter that was well produced. But in between Time Splitters 2 and 3, they made a game called Second Sight, in which it's a third-person game. It's on Steam, actually. It's probably...
I remember that.
And it had a nice story to it, and it had sort of a realistic but sort of comic art design. I don't know how to call it exactly. Like, the characters were very rounded and sort of bulky. But anyway, you wake up in this experimental laboratory, and you're this character that has psychic powers, and you can... sort of like the physics in Half-Life 2, move objects around. You can create a image of yourself and move ahead in certain rooms, and what's that called? Like, astrally projecting yourself, basically.
Uh-huh.
You can use telekinesis and all these other abilities, and just a very quaint, simple, and I mean, the mechanics and controls were a little frustrating, but still a very satisfying game that I come back to every once in a while. But yeah,
wow, I passed that one up because it just didn't look all that great. But maybe now I'll go back there because I like the look of it, you know.
It's got a great color palette, yeah. And there are some nice effects even probably 4 years after it released, yeah.
If you like adventure games, I just noticed that Still Life 2 is going to be coming out, and I thought Still Life was an example of, you know, it wasn't a stupendous adventure game, but it was a really good story. It was a good adventure. It had great mechanics, and it had a really gritty feel to it. It was almost like if Condemned had been an adventure game. Okay, then maybe that's a little... It's not quite as gritty as Condemned, but it had that kind of feel to it. And it was very, very exciting. The ending, I was like, eh, on, but they clearly wanted to kind of set it up to be an ongoing story. But I thought it was a terrific adventure that just wasn't, you know, it didn't quite hit great. But I'm delighted, you know, that they're coming out with another one. So I'm going to be checking that out very soon. We have some terrific reader questions this week. So why don't we start taking a gander at those? Oh, by the way, if you have games that we, you know, like we were talking about, ones that, you know, weren't absolutely great, stupendous games, but that you just very much enjoyed, let us know about them. PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com, and we'll give you the telephone number at the end of the podcast.
Hey, PC Gamer, this is Richard McFall. A question for you guys. I'm gonna shoot you a little voicemail over the call. What's a game that makes you emotional sometimes, like a cutscene or the storyline itself? Does it make you like cry, or does it make you tear up, or what? Or does it make you just sad or happy? But I think it's either Fallout 1 or Fallout 2. And I think this was mentioned on a podcast earlier before, but where at the end of the, I think it's the end of the end game, where the cutscene is zoomed out from the TV and it shows the destruction or whatever. And I think they play the Remember song or something like that or whatever. I got a little softened up there, but real men cry, so I wonder what you guys had ever, you know, gotten a little soft on. Well, anyway, thanks for the podcast. Please answer this question. I'd like to know. Goodbye.
If real men cry, then even more real men squeal in fear when Alma turns corners around you. I am absolutely terrified of horror. Like anything horror movies, horror video games, I'm a total sissy. And I remember playing just the Fear demo, and I was playing it in the dark by myself, and I got so scared that I escape quit out of the demo like 3 times before I finished it. So fear is technically an emotion, so you know, I didn't get teary-eyed, but yeah, I got terrified. Is that a chicken noise I hear?
What? No, actually, I was just hearing a chicken too, but at the end of Grim Fandango.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I had spent like literally weeks with these characters, and I didn't cry at the very end. I cried near the end because something happened. It wasn't something devastating or sad. It was because, you know, people were parting, and you know, I just spent weeks with these people, and you know, it was like seeing friends go away, and I knew that that was, you know, I wasn't going to hang out with them again. You know?
That's sort of a common thing I get from all really, really gripping games that take a long time to play. Is that there's just an emotion that when you're done with the game, it's really sad. You're done.
Yeah, like, and you want to go, hey, wait, don't go. You know, but you know, that's it. That's,
we can hang out longer.
Yeah, and I was really sad to see the character go.
That's what MMOs are for, right?
You
never have to let go.
You know, I just was, I mean, and I, it actually, but this one, it just actually made me cry because, and again, it's not because the character died. It just was the parting. And I was like,
I think party-based RPGs, Mass Effect, Baldur's Gate, KOTOR are really the source of that kind of feeling that you're talking about for me, where, I mean, again, you invest in these characters in their story, but also like their stats. Like, even if you're not sad necessarily, you're sort of depressed because that investment of time and energy and like your combat and accumulation stops. Like, it has to stop. Mm-hmm. You know, especially in those traditional RPGs where there's a cutoff point, you can't just continue to explore the world and level up, etc. So
yeah, Mass Effect was exactly that way for me. When I finished, like, I was going to go play WoW afterwards, and I couldn't. I just had to kind of stop, and I went and just sat down on my bed, and I was just like, you know, just letting the whole thing soak in. All my buddies were gone. I tried to start like another campaign right afterwards, but no, it's just not the same.
Well, that
that's sad. That makes me sad.
That credit sequence is so intense.
Okay, if you haven't played Beyond Good and Evil, I'm warning you. Spoiler
alert. Oh, snap.
Here it comes. Here it comes. Your Jade has a companion throughout the game named Paige, and he's a fat pig. Boar, actually. I think he's more definitely boar-like. But he has these really cool jet boots that let him do all kinds of like cool things. And there's a point at which the game... Spoiler alert! There's a point at the game in which he gets abducted. And she looks in this box where he's supposed to be, and all she sees is his boots. And I teared up with that one because it was just his little boots.
It's a shame.
anyway, but then I went out and shot things.
Exactly.
My God, yeah.
That's the cure.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what a man does.
Absolutely.
So how about Portal? How about the companion cube?
Oh my gosh.
I mean, a lot of people bring that up in threads. That was a very strong decision they had to make, or were forced to make, I guess.
It was poignant. I will definitely say that. But I think I was sort of onto her at that point, and I was starting to get defensive. And when I get defensive, I lose my compassion for inanimate objects. You know,
that's
so
it's
them or me,
you know,
basically. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's just so interesting how I respond, though. Like, Valve said, like, they tested that thing over and over, and just by slapping a heart on the side of the box, like, it evoked this attachment to it, you know?
Yeah.
It's just weird how it works that way. Anyway, but Half-Life 2, I'm not sure if it was in the first episode, but this is kind of a recurring thing through most of the episodes where Gordon is descending down an elevator, and Alex kind of looks down at you very subtly and puts her hand on the glass door and just looks down. And you're like, you're kind of like, okay, I hope I come back to you. You know, I hope you're just kind of thinking about those moments where you're running together or you're driving together along the highway and you kind of want to be reunited with her character. It's really powerful.
You know, the Siberia games, the Adventures 1 and 2, I remember that, throughout the entire game, I just felt this sense of awe because she explores a really beautiful city that's filled with automatons, mechanical, you know, buildings and beings. And I remember, because like, at first when she starts the game, she's kind of a hardened lawyer from New York. And just the wonder of this city and of the things that this one person created starts to pry her away from, you know, the life that she had. And I kind of shared that journey with her, you know, just because your companion during the game is an automaton who's this sort of quirky dude. And it transmitted a sense of wonder to me that is unforgettable. So I found that entire game to be both games to be very moving. So again, but then I shot something furry. Let's take another question.
Hey everybody, this is Danny from Indiana and I have a challenge for you. I'd like you to convince me to like Fallout 3. It seems like an excellent game, but I played it for a few hours and just couldn't get into it. And it seemed really hard at points, which was frustrating. Good luck, and I love your podcast. Mr. Andy B., much love for your work on all your podcasts, including this one. Bye.
Wait,
thanks, man.
You do other ones?
Allegedly.
Oh, allegedly. Man.
You two timing.
Three
four.
Timing.
Four.
Podcast harlot.
What would you have me do?
You know what? The first thing that came to my mind was don't play it. Don't play it for 6 months and then go back. There are lots of games like when I first play them, I'm like, you know. But then I go back 6 months later and I'm like, whoa, this is awesome. You know, especially when you get frustrated early in a game. That kind of poisons your enthusiasm for a while. And, you know, you may not need any cajoling. You may go back to it 6 months and be like, oh, I am totally into this. Because I also found it a little bit hard at the beginning, too.
I think there's a certain amount of... Because if you haven't really played the first two games, I can see how it can be like a jarring experience to kind of jump into to the world and kind of have all these like kind of awkward-looking NPCs trying to like tell you what to do and give you these epic choices. But the way I look at it is coming from the first two games, it's almost like jumping into like a better version of a dollhouse that you're playing with. And so you still have to like use your imagination to fill in the gaps, but it's definitely like giving you a different view It's like what it's like if you ever thought of what the anthill was like on the inside. That's sort of like what Fallout 3 is to Fallout 1 and 2. It's like you get to jump in the inside and like see things from the ground perspective. And even though it might not be an analog for real life, it's a cool analog for like that world. And so if you kind of use your imagination to keep yourself within like the constraints of the world, I think you really get to soak it up and like get into it a lot. But that's just how I feel about games in general. So
I'm not going to say anything because Andy just kind of hit that one out of the park.
That was like one of the most badass responses I've ever heard.
Yeah.
To any question ever.
Like, I think you could have given that speech as Bill Paxton in Independence Day when they're about
and you
to
would go on the attack. You'd get in the planes.
Oh my! That blew me.
I would have gotten in the planes.
Off my porta potty.
Whoa! Well, that's just kind of the feeling I get in games in general. That's just kind of how I feel about them. Like, they're not. They're obviously not real life, but they're so powerful if you just let them take you into the world.
Do you ever wonder what it's like on the inside of an anthill? That was brilliant!
Andy Bauman, ladies, is still single.
Wait, that's not true.
I have his Skype number.
It's not true?
Well,
it's not like it matters. You don't have any problems seeing all kinds of people at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Come on now. You know I love you best. You know I love you best.
Yeah. Yeah, there's nothing really more to say. It's like an anthill on the inside. That was just epic.
I'm going to be thinking about that for hours.
Oh, I know.
This is what the KOXM listeners are missing out by not hearing you talk as much, right?
Yeah, most of the time, I don't really have anything good to say.
I would like to add one quick three-step solution to enjoying Fallout 3. Find a teddy bear, find a rocket launcher, find a super mutant. Actually, four steps, and then blow off that super mutant's head with the teddy bear rocket launcher. If you can't enjoy that, there's something wrong with you.
Well, there's a prescription.
I think his name is Rich, the guy that called in. Maybe I'm mistaken. But one thing I'd recommend too is the Green World mod for Fallout 3. If you're turned off by the art design, the strong visual filters in the game, and you want to explore a world that's maybe a little more vibrant, that might be one solution for it.
Let's take another question. Maybe we'll do a call for
this. Is Derek from Georgetown, Ontario, Canada with
Ella.
And we really appreciate you putting Ella on the radio show. She loves hearing herself every night. Our question, Ella and I play Lego Batman together. We have lots of fun. And she would like to know what other good PC games there are to play together, family-oriented games. And don't say Peggle. Thank you, and remember...
Play PC game and don't be a lame. Goodbye.
Yes.
Atta girl.
So we had several check boxes we needed to fulfill for this podcast. One of them was adorableness. Fulfilled.
Done.
Check.
Got it.
Wow. And a rhyme.
Check.
Well done, Ella. Geez, family-friendly co-op games. I have to say, right now, I'm drawing a blank. I'm even panicking. My palms are sweating a little bit.
Hang in there, Logan.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you very much. So I'm going to say Josh, the intern, had better have a good answer.
Oh, I have plenty of answers. Okay. MMOs. Easy.
Ooh.
Yes.
That is ideal. I can't even tell you the number of husbands and wives and sons and daughters and grandparents and grandchildren that I run into playing World of Warcraft together.
Mm-hmm. Do you like being a drug dealer? I'm just, you know, that's a question.
It pays well.
Okay.
So even a very young girl, you know, that would be a good choice?
Actually, I mean, is Free Realms out right now, Josh?
Yeah, it is. It came out a couple weeks ago.
That was the one I was going to recommend. It's from Sony Online, the EverQuest folks, in other words. And, I mean, I've basically only watched trailers. I know you've played a little bit of it, Josh, but, I mean, it has things like kart racing in it. It's kind of like a very hodgepodgey mash of lots of different things. And it's very kid-friendly again.
But, yeah, it's a lot of mini-games. And the great part about it, if you're worried about your kids, is if you set up your account as a kid account, I think 13 or under or something like that, it's set up to where people can only use certain chat phrases like hello, do you want to help me, stuff like that.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah,
so you don't have to worry about, you know, some creepo getting on there and saying some weird stuff to your kid at all.
Creepo
creepos. Man,
Free Realms is great. Wizard 101 is another kid-friendly game. And these are all games that adults can enjoy as well. I mean, it might not be your particular cup of tea, but there's plenty in Free Realms to keep adults entertained, all the racing games and all the other mini-games.
Yeah, sorry. The other suggestion I'd have requires a fair amount of patience, but I don't know, when I was younger, I had a lot of fun playing adventure games with my parents or an older cousin or something. Just trying to deconstruct certain situations and figure out what item goes where and figure out puzzles. I mean, it's obviously a single-player experience still, but...
No, but it can be done in a very cooperative way if you're sitting right next to each other, you know?
You're talking it out.
Yeah. Siberia, it's perfect for that. It's a really beautiful game, and it's great for kids.
Strong Bad as well.
Oh, what? Really? Strong Bad for kids?
Well, it's... I mean, it's pretty...
It's not ribald or anything?
It's not vulgar. I mean, it's still pretty... I mean, correct me if I'm wrong. I haven't played all the games. I've watched a lot of their online stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it says, like, crap and sucks and stuff. So I guess it just depends on what you want your kid in particular. I was playing Agatha Christie's, and then there were none, with my mom and dad this weekend on the Wii. And it was a very adventure, but it was all social because we're like, oh, do you think we should go in this room? Should we try and do this? It's a really good way. You know, my parents aren't kids, but they're just getting into video games. And so it's a really nice way to kind of, as a community, and I could help them out so they never felt like they were stuck.
I liked that game. I thought they did a really good job.
Yeah, it's really good.
And it's not easy working with the Christie Estate. So they had to, you know, they had to check off on all this, alterations to the plot and all that. And even within all those restrictions, they still turned out a really terrific game. But listeners, if you have suggestions for, family-friendly co-op games, send them to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com. We would love to hear them because, there's got to be more out there, especially like, third-person action-y games that are fun, like... Lego Star Wars and whatnot. So let us know. We have somebody who wrote in to tell us about something that we forgot, a great tutorial. Let's hear him from another podcast listener.
Hey guys, this is Casey in Kansas City. I just wanted to point out a glaring misstep in your podcast number 174 about tutorials, and I cannot believe that nobody mentioned the original Half-Life's Hazard Course as a great example of a training level. That was just, it gave you everything you needed to know in the game, including that stupid backpack jump that you didn't use until you got all the way to the part of the game that everybody hated. So, discuss amongst yourselves. I just can't believe it.
I believe we did talk about it, but there was a transmission error. There was a satellite dropout.
It was lost.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. I'd sort of argue that while it did a good job of introducing movement mechanics and some of those in a challenging and relatively interesting environment, and it was sort of canonical in the sense that, okay, Gordon was getting into his suit and he had to run this little gauntlet through the airlock and whatnot. I mean, Half-Life starts off so slowly, and I guess part of that is to build some expectation about like what big event is going to change the status quo at Black Mesa. But I mean, you come in on the train, you walk in, you get your suit on. It takes a long time to get started, and I don't know whether or not that's a successful tutorial or a successful introduction to the game.
I thought it was a functional tutorial, but I didn't think it was
pleasant.
it wasn't. It didn't sweep me away or anything like that.
Sure.
All right, I'm going to do a terrible thing here, but when I think of something that kind of throws you in a tutorial that's a trial by fire, it's like the beginning sequence in Resident Evil 4, where you're escaping zombies and they're crashing through the windows and coming upstairs and all that, and you just need to know the controls or they're going to eat you, and they probably do a few times before you figure them out. That was like kind of, to me, a great example of a tutorial because it sweeps you up with the energy of the game immediately the minute you start, But again, the Half-Life 1, it was functional, and but it does, I think the game was intended to start slow and just sort of slowly ramp up. So it did its job just fine.
I'm going to have to take a time out here. They just announced the new sniper update.
Hello.
Dun, dun, dun.
Oh, yes.
Breaking news. All right, so this is sort of looking like a anti-spy defensive item, not an offensive weapon like we sort of talked about earlier for the sniper, in that we're not sure if you have to equip or how it equips, if it equips automatically, but seemingly it protects you from backstabs, which again is like the instant kill if you get stabbed by a spy. And when a sniper is in his scope and he's looking through that tunnel vision, he's very vulnerable to, he has no peripheral vision. But apparently it only has one use. Is that right, Josh?
Yeah, just one use and then it shatters, it says.
Hmm. And it's showing the spy dead in the picture. I'm not sure if it'll stun the spy. It has like this battery attached to it, so it presumably it's implying like that you stab the shield with a knife and it conducts the electric charge through the knife, and we're not sure if it'll stun him or kill him, but either way, that's really interesting. I guess the balancing is that it only has one use, but that's really the only defensive item in the game so far, if I'm correct, other than the healing gun, the metagun of the medic.
Yeah, it looks like it won't kill the spy because it says, plus if they want to stab you again, they'll have to wait until their knife cools down. So the knife must like be electrocuted and you just have to wait.
Interesting. Well, that's very cool. I'm a big fan of it on paper. That's pretty cool. Thanks for alerting us, Josh.
And thanks for the breaking news. Stop the podcast. Well, we've almost used up all our satellite time, so let's talk playlists. I've been playing The Longest Journey for an upcoming game club.
Nice.
Which,
dude.
Yes.
I was going to bring up that game is like an emotional experience. It's one big emotional ride of awesome.
Oh, yeah. It's on Steam, so it's only like $10. I highly recommend it. I'm very much loving being back there and playing the game again. I'm also rediscovering Tornado Jockey after playing this iPhone knockoff of the game. It's a PC game by Wild Tangent that's just about destroying everything in your wake, which is something I love to do. I've been playing a lot of Quake Live recently, and then the Chaser, the no-frill shooter I was talking about earlier. And all that might get knocked off by Still Life 2 once it arrives in my hot little hands. How about you, Evan?
I'm about to start Killing Field tonight. That releases today. I'm not sure exactly what time, but I'm guessing around midnight EST. That'll be available on Steam for $20. And sort of stopped playing Demigod a little bit because I've been working on this feature. And like I mentioned earlier, we're going to try and get a Titan Quest game going. I think it's up to 6 or 8 people. Me and Josh and Andy Salisbury and our friend Stan from X-Fire. So hopefully we'll get that going this weekend and have a good time.
Were you referring to the which feature?
Of course. That's precisely the one from where.
Yes. Nice. And how about you, Andy?
I've still been playing Far Cry 2. Which is coming along nicely.
You're enjoying it more?
Yeah, I got to the like sort of second part of the game now, where you go to the southern end of the map. But then it's funny because you think that things are going to sort of be a little different, like as far as your mission structures and stuff go, but it actually is exactly the same. But you're still doing basically the exact same
thing. That's the surprise!
Just different landscape and different friends. But it's okay. It's still fun. What?
Can I ask real quick if we've stopped playing Plants vs. Zombies? Because I have.
I only watch my girlfriend play it. I haven't played it yet.
Okay.
It's my like netbook game, you know, when I'm too lazy to get out of bed and actually, you know, go to the computer.
But speaking of PopCap, I'm down to the last 3 challenges on Peggle Nights, which is keeping me like super occupied because those are just like grind fests.
Oh yeah, yeah.
You just have to sit there and just pop balls.
Those last two are going to extract a pound of flesh, though. Oh, yes, they will.
Hey, you've been on that for months, Andy.
I know. Like, I've been kind of casually going through it, and now it's like it's getting down to the hardcoreness. You just have to sit there.
It's like he's doing his Peggle dissertation now.
Yeah.
Almost there.
I never thought. I kind of thought I wouldn't do it on Peggle Nights because it was taking forever, but now that I'm almost there, I'm just like, oh.
They should send you a robe and a scepter.
I did get a mug.
Nice.
Excellent.
Mr. Oh, go ahead.
Sorry, I don't want to encourage cheating, Andy, but I know there's some
no
helpful videos on YouTube of people playing Peggle.
Ooh.
To show you how to do certain things.
I don't need
things
those.
You wouldn't imagine.
Yeah, you just emasculated him. What was that?
Yeah. I don't need those.
Mr. Augustine, what have you been playing lately?
Well, I have to admit, I have not logged into World of Warcraft in over 2 weeks. And this is the longest period of time, I think, since the game was released like 4.5 years ago. You guys have been keeping me pretty busy. I was playing some Warhammer Online for a piece I was writing. Tons of Champions Online. Every time those beta window open, me and Dan are there playing through it. And Cryostasis for review, unfortunately.
Ooh, dun dun dun.
I mean, it's not terrible, but...
But it's still unfortunate.
I could have found better ways to spend my time.
Well... This is Logan Decker, your podcast host, and I'm giving you a direct order to send us your questions in MP3 format to PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com. That's PCGamerPodcast@gmail.com, or just call us toll-free at 877-404-1337 at extension 724 and record your question there. Keep it short, keep it clean, or we'll report you to the FCC or MPAA or IAA or some equally mean agency. You can also subscribe to our awesome magazine by heading over to PCGamer.com and, well, subscribing. We're also looking for gamers who crave instant fame by having their awesome screenshots and photos of their rigs and gaming setups printed in the magazine. Send them to letters@PCGamer.com, and you just might see your handiwork in the PC Gamer letters section and read the entire world over. For the PC Gamer podcast crew, this is a rock legend, Logan Decker, saying thanks for listening, and we're looking forward to getting together with all of you again next week. So, joining me today at PC Gamer... No, sorry. All right, let's try that again.
Jerry, you're being loud. Be quiet.
You know, I am going to put my foot down. This is unacceptable.
Jerry's disrupting the podcast again.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am really, really sorry about this interruption to our podcast. Mr. Sim is creating a real scene over here, and have we grown up? I'm really sorry about that. Please.
Jerry's a bad influence on me.
But did you jump on him?
I might have.
Oh, man.
Only because he was staring and making faces at me while I was trying to talk.
He's got yak flu.
The cholera spreads.
I'm feeling it. You know, I also...
I just feel like I can finally express the things I've always wanted. You know?
Yeah, I know. I know. Do we want to... Do you want to drum later? Yeah, excellent. All right, thank you, Mr. Bellman.
Of course.
And have a lovely afternoon.
Yes, please do.
Later, Gators.
Not recording other podcasts.
Exactly.